Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Evam prasanna manaso Bhagavat bhakti yogataha. Bhagavat pradhyana mukta sangha sajayate. Translation:
thus established in the mode of unalloyed goodness, the man whose mind has been enlivened by contact with devotional service to the Lord gains positive scientific knowledge of the personality of Godhead in the stage of liberation from all material association. Material association is somehow or other always following us in this material world. Once Srila Prabhupada was speaking about the topic of anartas. Anarta means what brings benefit. Anarta, what brings no benefit. Translated from a more transcendental perspective, the word anartha means that which brings no benefit on the spiritual path, or a stumbling block on the spiritual path. So then Srila Prabhupada said, yes, the body is an anartha. So the entire body is such an anartha. Because these bodies are somehow or other now covering the spirit soul. And as a result, our natural capacities are limited. And therefore, we are not satisfied. Our true nature is not satisfied. However, there is a path of pure devotional service in this world. This is known as the path of pure goodness. Because although this body may be considered like a lump of ignorance, still, by engaging it in the service of the Lord, it becomes transcendental. The classical example is the example of a bar of iron that is placed in fire. And it is said that this iron, when it is heated enough in the fire, it begins to act like fire. So in this way, even material things that are in itself products of ignorance and that are in itself limiting, they can also become transcendental. Just now, coming from South Africa, from summer into winter, I'm not sure what is the worst, the cold or the darkness. It's so dark. What a shock. Coming from all the bright light and the sun and early mornings with full of light into the darkness. So that is only a comparison between Africa and Europe. Can one imagine coming from the effulgence of the spiritual world into the darkness of the material world? How dense is the darkness of the material world? How thick are the layers of ignorance? How much is the living being covered by forgetfulness? And we who are somehow or other awoken to Krishna consciousness, it is our Krishna consciousness may be compared to a clouded sky where sometimes a little hole in the deck of clouds appears and a little of light, a beam of light just comes through before the hole is again covered by a greater cloud. How deep is our Krishna consciousness? But here we are seeing that the mode of unalloyed goodness, the state of consciousness that was found in Vasudev. Vasudev, Krishna's father, is the embodiment of that consciousness of pure goodness. It means to be transcendental through the three modes of material nature. It means that one can be in this world, but because one is constantly engaged in devotional service, and particularly in glorification of Krishna, devotional service is aimed at pleasing Krishna. Rishikesha, Rishikena, Sevanam, Bhakti, Uchite. One simply is desiring to please Krishna. Instead of serving one's own senses, we are aiming to satisfy the senses of Krishna. That is devotional service. Ihayasya hriyadasya karmana manasa gira nikila swapya vasta sujivan mukta sa uchite. We are always eager to serve Krishna and glorify Him by chanting His name or speaking of His transcendental glories. And in this way, the glory of Krishna is spreading all over the world, all throughout the universe. This is most pleasing to Krishna. Why is the chanting of Krishna's name most pleasing to Krishna? Is it that there is a trace of vanity in his character? When everyone says, oh, Krishna, Krishna. And Krishna says, yes, more. Yes, more. Is that how it is that Krishna is enjoying the chanting of his holy name? No. Krishna relates to the chanting in a much deeper way. Because the name of Krishna, Abhinato Nami Namino, is no different from Krishna. Krishna knows very well the potency of his own name. He knows that whoever hears that name is lifted up from this deep, dense, dark ignorance of material existence and awoken to the original state of Krishna consciousness. The original state of Krishna consciousness is not only that one knows, yes, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, yes, I accept that. That is very rare. That is most exalted. But more exalted still is to become completely attracted to Krishna. And to not only become attracted to Krishna's amazing qualities, but to develop through that attraction a desire to serve Him. That is the basis of transcendental love, the mood of the residents of the spiritual world. And it is Krishna's desire to reclaim all the living beings. It is mentioned here a little further in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the purpose of Krishna for appearing again and again in this world in various avatars, in various incarnations, is to reclaim those who are in pure goodness. It is Krishna's objective to reclaim the conditioned souls. Because Krishna knows that these living beings are just a shadow of themselves. That those who are in the material world trying to somehow or other squeeze some happiness out of material objects and decorate the darkness with little candles and stars and some green branches to make the month of December a little lighter. They do not realize that the artificial glitter of the material energy is dull and compared in Srimad Bhagavatam to the glitter of the firefly in comparison to the shine of true luminaries. It is that in the rainy season, there are some who are seeing the little firefly and think that they are the stars. Yeah. So, we are hearing about the most exalted devotees, the acharyas. Somehow or other, that came into this world were eternally liberated souls. And these acharyas, they were so exalted that it's just inconceivable for us who are trying, who are attracted to Krishna, and who are trying to be devotees. But the acharyas seemed so strong, so fixed. They were just cutting, eating, sleeping as if it's nothing. Just without, so determined. We hear several stories about them ignoring eating and sleeping. Gorkha Sordas Babaji would just, when hungry, take some mud from the bank of the Ganga and eat that. Finished. So stomach is quiet. Who can do such a thing? Then he would sometimes have a problem at night while he was chanting that he would fall asleep. So then he took again some clay from the Ganga, put it in a cloth and tied it on his head. So it was sitting like a big pile on his head. So whenever he would, Hare Krishna, nod off a little, then the weight of all that mud on his head would keep him awake. What a determination. I mean, let us try that, you know. We'll do a clay retreat. I'll invite everyone for a clay retreat, and when it's time for prasadam, we'll all take some clay and munch away. And, you know, when it's time to go to bed, everyone put a stack of clay on their head and keep on chanting. I think, you know, slowly a few people would sort of disappear, and in the end one find himself all alone with a stack of clay on their head. But it's what they did. Jagannath Das Babaji would chant for 72 hours non-stop. Three days, three nights. Just do nothing else. Just fast and chant, and that's it. No interruption. Again, inconceivable personalities. So we can carry on like that. And we don't know if we will ever get to such a level of Krishna consciousness. Time is going by, and yes, we cannot imagine a life without Krishna. That would be too dry, too shallow. Just enjoying material things. Just talk about what's going on in the news, politics, the things you can buy, the gifts you got for Christmas. The dog. The relatives and all those discussions, we can't tolerate them, not for long. We think it's very, very dry, these mundane discussions. So we have taste for Krishna, but how deep, and is it when we hear that in the early morning? It is said in Vrindavan, Rupa Goswami describes, the cowherd boys would wake up in ecstasy. Who wakes up in ecstasy? All just inconceivable. Wonderful and inspiring, but at the same time difficult for us to approach. We seem to be so far away. But we should know that that Lord Chaitanya's movement is not the movement to reclaim those who are in pure goodness. It is not the movement that will reclaim those who are fully self-realized and never under the influence of the three modes of material nature, never ever attracted to enjoy the senses. No. The movement of Lord Chaitanya is particularly to reclaim those who are most fallen. When Advaita Acharya was worshipping Lord Chaitanya to appear, at that time, finally the Lord appeared, but nobody knew it. But in due course of time, the Lord revealed himself, and in the house of Srivas, there was Nimai had just walked in, sat down on the altar, moved the shaligram, Shilas aside, and just sat down. And everyone understood he's the Supreme Lord. There was no doubt. And worship began, and then he began to reveal different things to different devotees. And finally, he asked each devotee, ask for a benediction. So Advaita Acharya was asking for a benediction. And he said, please, please give this mercy to those who are most fallen. But don't give it to those who are arrogant and proud, he said. And that's Chaitanya Bhagavat. And so particularly we can see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes to reclaim the most fallen. But don't give it to those who are arrogant and proud. What to make of that? That is the condition. The condition is to develop humility. Srila Prabhupada used to call people rascals. The word rascal, I never even knew the word rascal until I started connected to this movement. Then I heard the word rascal from time to time. Because Prabhupada would say rascal. And not that he would just go around and call everyone a rascal, but sometimes he would point out that people were indeed rascals. Now, the word shirkan is really not the same as the word rascal. Absolutely not. You cannot translate the word rascal into German, nor into Dutch, nor into many other languages. It's impossible. Rascal is rascal. The dictionary says that rascal is a mischievous person. A mischievous person is a person who is dishonest, who has a facade, who is actually just looking for a word. Yeah. So it's like that. The point is that there is responsibility. Yeah. You see the point? Rascal is a word where we are no longer just victims. What can we do? You know, I mean, we grew up like this, and you know, we didn't know any better. I'm proud to say, no, rascal. But we are only, you know, what can we do? I mean, like, I never knew that drinking coffee, that there was anything wrong with it. You know, my parents were drinking coffee, my great-grandparents. We've been drinking coffee for so many generations. I mean, you know, it's normal. I didn't know. Rascal. In other words, the word rascal includes a sense of responsibility, that we are responsible. And we must, not so much that we are going around and pointing at the whole street, you are a rascal, Of course they are. It is a whole street of rascals, but it's not that we make that our business to tell everyone they're rascals. Sometimes. But mostly they can't accept it. From Prabhupada they could, but from us not necessarily. But the point is that we ourselves must accept responsibility for our mistakes of the present and the past. And even if we didn't know so many things, like I just gave one example, coffee, you can fill in all the other rascal things that were sort of there in the past. But, and one might say, well, I didn't know. I was not aware of that. Doesn't matter. We should now look back and think, yes, but obviously the fact that I took birth in such a situation meant that I had already developed an attachment to sinful activities in a previous life and gradually went down. Gradually I went down. It's like we cannot say, well, I am just innocent. I'm innocent. I didn't know. I didn't know. And therefore I'm innocent. No, the very fact that we took birth in a fallen condition is the fact that previous to that we had already come to a sinful platform and now took birth in this condition. That is the situation. So a devotee must see himself with humility. Must see himself as fallen. Must see himself as I'm not great, and that is the one requirement to come to closer to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, it is not that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will only give the mercy to those who are not proud. We also saw that a very learned scholar came from Kashmir and he was extremely proud, a Digvijay Pandit who had a great reputation, many followers, and his pride was cut down by Nimai Pandit in a debate. You know? And maybe this is too heavy. So he was cut down by Nimai Pandit in a debate. And then it is said that after the Pandit was defeated, he became actually humble. He became a devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then explained, he said, a person with good qualities should never be proud. A person with good qualities should just be like a tree which is laden with many fruits. The branches naturally bow down. So if one has good qualities, one should naturally bow down. Well, this is difficult for us because especially the Western world has been wealthy for a while, and therefore there's a lot of pride in the Western world. It's difficult to bow down. But of course in India there's also lots of pride, caste consciousness and all that. So much pride comes in. Pride is everywhere, all over the world. So, this is one thing we have to learn. To bow down, and not only to bow down to Krishna, but to bow down to his devotees, which is much more difficult. Krishna is perfect. And Krishna, he's the Supreme Lord, but devotees are human beings. And we can bow down to a great Acharya, Prabhupada, yes, we all bow down to Prabhupada, even in Prabhupada's presence, alright, that's okay, great Acharya. But no, one must bow down to all the Vaishnavas. And bowing down is not just a physical thing. It means it includes an alteration in consciousness. When Krishna said, "Man mana bhava man patu majai man namaskaru," Krishna is explaining one must bow down to me, render service to me. That is also our relationship with the devotees. So in this relationship with in the community of devotees, we have to develop that quality of humility, which is extremely difficult. We are all, in modern times, we are all over-educated, and everyone, all over-educated and in mundane knowledge, and everyone naturally thinks, I know something. I'm educated. I know something. That sense is very, very strong. Everybody thinks something, and when someone's speaking and we're listening, thing like, what's he saying now? Well, I don't agree with that. I agree with this. We have opinions. We're very opinionated. And all that, we see that one of the great followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabodhananda Saraswati, a sannyasi, said he would go before people, put a blade of grass as a sign of humility, and then come very humbly and then say, "You are a very intelligent, aristocratic personality." And after flattering them, then he would basically come to the point, and the point was, "So please forget everything you've learned and just take to Krishna consciousness." Right? So that is all very difficult. 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam describes a story about a young girl who was of marriageable age, and one day she was home alone. That day, two men came to the door of the house, of the family house. One was elderly, and the other one was a young man. They looked respectable, and they were guests. So, in Vedic culture, in household life, one of the prescribed duties is Nriyagya, or the taking. Nri means men, right? Just like Nrisringa, Nara. And it means that one must serve any guest as if God is coming to his house. That's the tradition. She took that, so they came to the house, and since they were two and there was an elderly man, it seemed appropriate to receive them. Because the young man would have come along, she would have never received him in that. The two she received. But she was impressed by that young man. She wanted to, she thought he would make a really good candidate for marriage. But then she wanted to impress them by cooking. So she went in the kitchen cooking. But when she started cleaning the rice, which is done on a tray, by throwing it up in the air, the bangles on her arms start to collide and make noise. Then she thought that they will hear this noise of my bangles, and then they will realize that I'm cleaning the rice myself and that we don't have a servant to do it. And then they'll think, she's poor, then they'll never be interested in a marriage. So she decided to break off the bangles. So she broke off all the bangles, but left one, of course. So there was no need to break that one. So that she left. So in the end, there was only one bangle on either arm, and then there was no more noise. So it is explained that all these bangles are our ornaments, or all the things that we are proud of. My three swimming diplomas, my PhD, my the fact that I know so many slokas, or that I can stand on my head, or whatever else. I don't know. But there are many bangles, many, you know. The fact that I have a good taste, the fact that, you know, Whatever the bangles are, there are so many things that we are proud of, and each of them we are wearing like bangles. Then if there is the one Krishna bangle, all these other bangles are colliding with the Krishna bangles. So all the other bangles have to be broken off. Then, finally, the Krishna bangle remains. One of Srila Prabhupada's godbrothers, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Swami, wrote nice books, and I read them sometimes. He's no longer in this world. But he wrote nice things. When he says, when it comes to humility, one has to say goodbye to continents. One has to pass by oceans. One has to just disregard stars in the sky. In other words, he's making the point that big things, breaking these bangles is a big thing. It's like, it's like a big thing, a continent, you know. It's like oceans, stars, big things. One has to just say goodbye with courage, right? Say goodbye. Goodbye to my false pride. Goodbye to my false glory. Goodbye. I will no longer claim any fame from these attributes. And if I catch myself, then immediately I will correct it. That is Vaishnava. That is Vaishnava. So, one must practice to give credit to others and to not take credit for oneself. So it is said. One may never speak of his own glory, and a Vaishnava may only speak of the glory of others. Like this, we are cultivating humility. It is a fundamental principle of our sadhana, and without it, the bhakti creeper cannot really fructify. Without it, we cannot really advance very much. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I first joined in the temple in Vrindavan, and then after some time had to come back to Europe and then moved into the Amsterdam temple. And when I was in this Amsterdam temple, it was a very dynamic temple at that time. There were over 100 devotees in the temple, and every day 45 devotees would go out on book distribution. They would come back at night, and then we'd have a kirtan. So you can imagine, it was rocking. There was a restaurant in the temple. There was also a free lunch program, just like that in Soho Street, with about 40 guests every day. So it's like a Sunday feast every day we had, basically. And we had school programs every day. And we had a Harinam party going out every day with new devotees. Those were like sort of standard activities. And we had all the deities that are now in Radhadesh in Amsterdam. And they were also being worshipped very nicely there and so on. And we had a Sunday feast. We would get like 400 people on three floors. We had one floor for smelly hippies, there were many. And we had the restaurant, we used it for people in suits and ties, well dressed. And then in the temple room, we put like the potential devotees. So we like, there was a lot of traffic control, you know, like, okay, yeah, upstairs, you know, yeah in here. No, please. Okay. But we did that every Sunday and sort of managed these 400 people. And then we were doing good, like we're making lots of devotees. It was in that way a really dynamic temple. But because everyone was so busy with so many things, The other side was that nobody ever asked you, how are you? That was sort of something they didn't do, you know. It wasn't the spirit of the time. The spirit of the time was like, you know, preach and do big. So they asked you, how did you do today? Did you go out? Did you do big? If you didn't go out, you were just a neophyte. If you did go out preaching, you had to have big results. So they just ask you, so did you do big today? You had to say yes. Otherwise, if you said no, it meant you were not doing well. It meant you were in Maya. Basically. So therefore, there was no need to ask anyone, how are you? Those were the days. And there was this one devotee. He just was like a little different. He would actually ask people, how are you? You know? It was really refreshing, I must say. to be honest. So that devotee did a lot for me, actually, by asking, how are you? And then I told him, well, actually, I've just had hepatitis, because after I left India, I came back with severe hepatitis, and I've just been 5 months on my back, you know, with hepatitis, and now I've moved back into the temple, you know, because that's what happened to me. I joined India, got hepatitis, 5 months knockout, 17 people were hospitalized from me, and it was very contagious, and I was 5 months knocked out. Then I moved back into the temple, and it was rough, because I couldn't eat halva, and I couldn't eat puris, and there was nothing to eat. Now, everything was fried, you know, everything is pakora, halva, puris, you know, it's like health food consciousness didn't exist in those, and everything was deep fried, and there was nothing, I couldn't eat anything, my liver was finished, yeah. So, you know, he said, well, how are you doing? He said, well, you know, nothing to eat. So he said, oh, no problem. I'll cook you something. So he started making different breads and diet. He cooked a whole diet thing for me. So, like, you know, that was really good. Yeah? That was more than how are you. That was someone who was also following up and taking care. And then... he would bake this bread for me and then put a note on it, you know, and sign it with your dog servant. And I go, like, how in the world can a human being sign a letter with your dog servant? I thought it was just too much, you know, like, I mean, come on, you know, how can you call yourself a dog servant? That's too much. I wounded, you know, whatever it was. Yeah, it's shocking, no? You read something like that, it's too much. You know? But Vaishnavas, they think of themselves like fallen. They don't think of themselves like they're very proud. And he used to actually chant 64 rounds a day also. And then get up very early and then chant the lives out. Do a lot of service. So I actually advanced the body. He made me also get up and he made me chant 32 rounds. That was the price I had to pay for the diet. So then I was chanting 32 rounds and he said, and now you should recite every day one chapter of Bhagavad Gita and verses on, and the translations. And actually, he gave me that gift, you know, because I don't always do it, but since he trained me like that in my early days in Krishna consciousness, I go back to it. I go back to it, and then I again start chanting Bhagavad Gita slokas in the translation. Such a nice thing to do, actually. Purifying, and after a while, you know, whole chapters. It's amazing. And then the Gita becomes your companion. Then the Gita is with us. And this is exactly what Sanatana Goswami was saying about Srimad Bhagavatam. He's saying, Srimad Bhagavatam is my constant companion. I like the word constant companion. Very good point. Srimad Bhagavatam is my constant companion. Wherever I go, Srimad Bhagavatam is there. So, in this way we see how these Vaishnavas could do it. They were humble, they took the humble position, and then they could get absorbed. But if one is proud, then one is not exclusively dedicated to glorifying Krishna. Then one is still attached to self-aggrandizement. Self-aggrandizement. To self-glorification. Double translation. From complicated Deutsch to simple Dutch. Yes. Well, anyway, so it is like that. As long as one has a desire for recognition, it means we want to be glorified, and then we cannot glorify Krishna. Then we cannot chant very long. See? Then we can chant for a short time, and then it's like we're waiting to finish our rounds. But when we actually, the less we are looking for recognition for ourselves, the more we can chant. The more we can glorify Krishna. That's why, you know, that in the third verse of the Sikshastikam, these two points are connected. One must be more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree, and one must be ready to offer all respects to others. You see, the two. Then one can chant the holy name constantly, Kirtanya Sadahari. So, interesting how these two are connected. One must be humble, one must be tolerant, one must not take any glorification for himself, give it to all others, Krishna and all others, and then one can chant the name constantly. Because then no more self-glorification or self-aggrandizement. So this is a great enemy in spiritual life, this tendency for somehow or other recognition. And we already brought it with us, because we didn't break our bangles yet. You see, the girl broke her bangles, but we didn't. We still have our bangles. We put long sleeves over the bangles. And then chant, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hide your bangles. I cannot break my bangles. But sooner or later, we have to break the false pride in our material attributes, achievements, and so on. They are not significant. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur received this respectable, wealthy man who was interested in spiritual life and who came and said he wanted to join the ashram. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta received him very nicely because he was a man of standing, and he personally took care of him. He said, and he personally showed him around the entire ashram. He said, like this room, that way, there's the kitchen, here this is going on. And finally, he came to the Goshala, and there was one man taking care of the cows, and he was shoveling out the gopher, the cow dung. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, and this is so-and-so Das, whatever his name was. And it said, and now he will instruct you further. And he just walked away. So in the middle of touring him around the whole ashram, he took him to the Goshala. And then he said, and now he will instruct you. So that man didn't make it. He didn't make it. See, the Bhaktisiddhanta would test people like that. There was one man who had come for the program and who just said, oh, it was, at the end he started talking with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, said, it was a wonderful lecture. He said, I just forgot everything. It's just took me like just to another realm. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta just simply said to him, why don't you forget everything? Why don't you just stay here? And then the man sort of, his mind was freaking out. He was like, how do we get out of this? So he sort of said like, well, I already bought a return ticket. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, if you can't give up a return ticket to the material world, then how do you ever expect to attain Krishna? So like this, just stay, he said. So this spirit is in a way still alive. I can also say to all of you, just stay. Look, the temple room is nicely filled. We just stay. It's like no problem. Everything you require will be there. Yeah, just stay. There will be prasadam. No problem. And we'll make it nice. There will be clothes provided, bedding, everything. Everything is there. So just stay. Some of you then might say, okay, but then you must also just stay. I am not allowed to stay because I have a vow that I have to walk, that I cannot stay. So that's another thing. But I'll come back from time to time to see how you're doing. Simple. Sometimes they say that spiritual life is simple for the simple and complicated for the complicated. So those principles are there in spiritual life. Well, our objective is to purify ourselves. If we are developing a little bit of humility, then the next thing is, humility doesn't mean that we walk around all day long, I'm so fallen, how fallen am I? Yeah. Oh boy, I am fallen, I'm sinful, I'm terribly fallen. That's not like where humility ends. That's a step on the way, but the next step is, therefore, I need purification. So one who is humble is the next step is we'll look for purification. And that is our next objective. To say we look for purification. One who is not humble will not be able to surrender to all the demands of purification. So if we are serious about purification, then we must make a real endeavor. Okay, it doesn't matter whether you come from your house with the Uban, that's alright, or with a Mercedes, that's also alright. Of course you can donate the Mercedes. You'll accept your humble donation. You give a check with it as well. No problem at all. We'll accept. But the bottom line is that We all need purification wherever we live, whatever our situation is. That is the fact. Right? If we don't go for purification, then in all truth, what is our claim to humility? Humble means that we are ready to take guidance. Right? See, like when I'm proud, then nobody has to tell me anything. I know exactly what I have to do. Nobody has to tell me anything. I know. No. I know very well. You know what I mean? I can figure it all out by myself, and I don't need anybody to tell me anything. That's pride. So humility and looking for purification, the next step is also to look for guidance and shelter. So that is required. So one must take shelter of devotees. Who have taken shelter of devotees? Yeah. Doesn't matter where those devotees are from, because it doesn't even matter what they did before. It doesn't matter if they were born in a sinless family or in a sinful family. It doesn't matter. By surrendering to a pure devotee, they can become pure. Valmiki was a dacoit. Yeah? Everyone knows. A criminal. Yeah? Dacoit means he was robbing people and, dacoits, they take a life here and there. So that was going on. And Narada asked him to chant Ram. He couldn't do it. He said, no, I can't do that. All right, can you chant Mara? Mara. So the Mara that he could do, like to kill Mara. He could say that, So he could identify as a criminal. He could identify with kill Mara. So basically, he was chanting kill, 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 kill. So you can imagine what kind of consciousness he had at the time. But of course, Narada was very, very intelligent, and by chanting very quickly, Mara, 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 comes to say Mara, Mara. And that way he was chanting Rama, 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 Rama. And in that way, he became a pure devotee of Lord Ramachandra. Because he made a connection with the pure devotee, followed his direction, and then was given a process by which he became situated. So we must take shelter of devotees, and those devotees that have made commitments, and then we should also make commitments to purification. And for purification, one must commit to a process.
One cannot just haphazardly look for purification, not just occasional, when the sun shines, I feel like serving Krishna. In Germany, then, not so much. Huh? So, whenever one commitment means even when the sun doesn't shine, I'll serve Krishna. That's commitment. So, without commitment, how can you really purify? There's the story of a devotee of the early days, a lady who came to this movement, young girl, and she was asked to help Prabhupada in the kitchen, and he asked her to clean some pots. So there was one pot and it was sort of quite black at the bottom. Prabhupada said, "Oh, can you clean this pot?" So she sort of cleaned the pot and then brought it back. But it was still full of black cake on the bottom.
You know. So Prabhupada said, oh, you cleaned this pot very nicely, very nicely. But maybe you could just take this little black off the bottom. So goes back and like starts scrubbing the thing, right? Anyway, there was a layer in there that was impossible to get out. So she came back again. So there was a lot of it. And Prabhupada said, oh, you did so much work. Really, you got out so much of that black. I mean, really nice. But maybe you could just like take out this little black at the bottom also. Back. I mean, she spent the whole day, or not, but at least half the day cleaning that pot. But in the end, she did. She went back every time. In the end, it was like sparkling, the whole thing, you know, like the original metal color and everything. And the pot was like shining, and when she brought it to Prabhupada, he was shining even more than the pot. You know? And then, like, you know, that was, then she really got her purification that day. And she understood it, you know, that she got. And she really learned something very, very... she got a lot of mercy that day. She learned a lot. But she stuck to it. Her commitment was serious that day. So that is how it is, you know, like we have to do some service and commit to it and just work on the direction of the Vaishnavas, and then everything will be fruitful. But for that, we need to be humble. I feel like resting my nose on the microphone. And I do that more often when I've been flying a lot.